up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We're here. It is the final week of the NHL regular season, Drantzer. We can see the finish line, which is really the beginning this year.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like a finish line to me, bud. In past years,
it does. It feels like
in past years, play-in week, NBA play-in week was like marked the informal cool down of the Canucks talk season, and to me, this just feels like the last week of preseason.
Yeah, but that's a finish line too. So I agree with you.
Every end is a new beginning.
That's exactly right. That's what I'm saying here.
Yeah, fair enough. Fortune so cookie, Jamie Dodd.
It's the end of something and the beginning of something else. And this time, very, very exciting.
It's like when a caterpillar becomes a butterfly.
That's exactly right. Correct. That's what I'm going for.
The metamorphosis.
And we'll see exactly when that second and, you know, all important season gets going for the Canucks here. We have some information on that coming up, but lots to get into today. Gemma Karsten-Smith will join us in the second segment of the show. The Canucks are practicing right now, so we'll have an update from Canucks practice. But of course, it is the final week of the NHL regular season. Let's get things started with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 15th, the headlines, and there's a lot we could choose from today, Drantzer, but we'll start small, we'll start zeroed in. Canucks beat the Oilers 3-1 on Saturday in Edmonton. They sweep the season series with the Oilers, and their magic number to clinch the Pacific Division now, 1. Need only 1 point in their remaining 2 games, or for the Oilers to drop a single point in their remaining 3 games. And the Canucks will be officially division champs.
It's functionally sealed now. I mean, they're going to win the Pacific Division for the first time in franchise history. I think it'll be the 10th division crown in franchise history, but the vast majority of those were Northwest Division wins where whether they were good or not, the competition was bad. They've clinched the third most points ever accumulated in the regular season, although I would probably look at that, what is it, 2002-2003 season?
Yeah, so I was looking at this today. So, yeah, they will have the third highest points total no matter what, or at least the third highest points total. Third highest points percentage as well, because the 2012-2013 team in the lockout year was actually quite a bit behind them in terms of points percentage, finished with a 615 points percentage. So you can say third highest point total in franchise history for sure. Now, if you want to get into the subjective
third best like regular season, stuff like that,
then you might start to look at some of those West Coast Express teams.
I don't think you might. I think it's pretty clear. So the 2002-2003 iteration of the West Coast Express, they won 45 games, but how many did they tie?
They had 13 ties.
Okay. Because remember, there's no longer ties. So as of 2005, every time you go in overtime, it's a coin flip. And if you lose, you still get the point, right? Whereas back then, you could lose in overtime.
You could, but you would get a point still.
Oh, you still would?
Yes.
Okay.
That was in the old, like, four-column standings day.
But so
they only had,
have...
Interestingly, they only had one overtime loss and 13 ties,
and
that team.
And they had shootouts?
No. That was pre-shootout. Shootout was post-lockout.
Right. So point is, there wasn't, like, an artificial winner at the end of every single game, right? And so you assume coin flip. Let's give them the lesser side of the coin flip, like 6 more points. But even if they had, 4 or 5 more points, they'd still be ahead of where the Canucks are now, although Vancouver has 2 games remaining. So pretty comparable, I'd say. You probably have to be careful about calling it like the third best regular season in franchise history, because I think that one very much has a case to be still better, depending on how many of the 4 remaining points the Canucks pick up over the balance.
Now, I think it's close enough that you get into some of the other things. Like, for example, that team, of course, famously did not win
its division, right, going into the playoffs.
They
and so choked. That's the kind of thing where even if you're doing the adjustment on, okay, give them, you know, five or six extra points because of like the coin flip in, in overtime. And let's say it's a tie then at that point.
But
do you
then
still
factoring
give,
in the vibes.
Yeah, well, but this team won the division, right? Do you tilt the scales a little bit in their direction? So.
And a division that's much harder to win.
Yeah.
So, no, you know what? Fair enough. I just think it's debatable still. 45 wins in a world without shootout wins. And you know, this team's actually been sort of weirdly not good at shootouts.
They haven't been in many this year either.
But they also haven't been good at overtime games. Like, their overtime record's not, like, inflated. You know what I mean?
That's true.
That's not been the source of this team's success. In fact, they've had a fair few overtime L's. So, anyway, it's debatable. But point is, you're debating between this and the most successful regular season team of the West Coast Express era. That's a testament to just how well things have gone for the Canucks through 80 games.
And I would say also, so, you know, best team in franchise history regular season, of course, was the 2010-2011, 117 points. Second was the following year, also won the President's Trophy with 111 points. Canucks with 107 points right now, two games remaining. So they still have a chance to catch that 2012 team for the second most points in franchise history in a regular season. Also have a chance to be just the third team ever to get to 50 wins. They're at 49 right now, of course. Now, that, again,
50 wins to me honestly matters more than being like the third season to win 50. There's something nice and round about 50. Mm-hmm. I remember even being a fan in 2010-11, and the 50 win milestone was like something I wanted to see the team do, because in my head I always thought, it's kind of sad that this franchise has never won 50 games.
Uh-huh.
Like, I remember them winning that 50th game and being excited about it back in the day. And I think I should keep that standard. 50 wins is a nice round number.
Yeah,
you have to be a really good team to win 50.
What? Absolutely.
Yeah. That to me is sick.
So in terms of, and look, these are all kind of very small scale stakes. They're nice. You know, the cherries on top of what has already been a phenomenal season that we're talking about here, because that's the kind of key for me, is that win on Edmonton. And we can get into some of how it actually played out, but it kind of seals a non-disappointing end to the regular season, right?
Yeah.
Where you're not like, oh, we didn't have the third best record. We didn't win the division despite leading for all this time. We're backing in. We're kind of sliding into the playoffs. That game going in, finishing the season sweep of Edmonton, all but locking up the division, and I did enjoy Rick Tocchet not taking the bait in your question
You know what? It was just clumsily phrased. It wasn't. I don't know if the audio picked it up, but I was like, yeah, that's my bad. That's a trap question. I'm sorry.
Yes,
I just didn't phrase it right.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm not answering that.
An intentional trap question?
You can't trap me in that corner.
Were you like, it sounded like you meant to trap
me. No, I literally just like, because if you. Well, and I actually don't know if the cameras arrived on time, but I asked Tyler Myers a pretty similar question, except I was like on, I think I used a word like on the precipice or on the verge of, like I just forgot to put in that qualifier to allow him to talk about it without talking about it. You know what I mean? So I got it right the first time. I whiffed the second one up. So it goes.
But that's the key for me is, hey, you've guaranteed that this week can be more of like an exhale, a chance to exhale, relax,
rest some guys,
rather than fretting about your form going into the playoffs.
So there's a lot of things that I want to talk about coming out of that game. Let's quickly just talk about the game itself. So Canucks sort of open. They take, a couple penalties, or certainly that one early penalty.
Yeah.
The JT Miller penalty, a little bit undisciplined, a trip on DeHarnay. And then they sort of get crushed for about 13 minutes. Like, the Oilers were all over them, just absolutely generating at will, sort of a couple sequences where they were able to, you know, really put a Canucks forward or Canucks defender like in the torture chamber and get to the inside. It wasn't just territorial. Like, they were generating high quality looks, a lot of misses, some great DeSmith saves. I think that was probably DeSmith's most impressive like goalie win since the last time he did in Edmonton.
Game two in Edmonton.
Yeah. And we'll come back to this. But once Vancouver got that Lafferty goal, Nurse played it badly. I think he deflected it past Skinner. Skinner also lost his post on the play. A nice finish for Lafferty, just his fourth goal in the last 41 games. And we'll come back to that too. Once that happened, the Canucks were the better team. Like, I thought their defensive game was excellent. You could see, you know, the way that their forecheck herded Edmonton's forwards, especially because the Oilers weren't disciplined enough about breaking out quickly, and they were just getting herded into big Canucks defenders who were finding sharp ways to counterattack and just like playing Staples-style Rick Tocchet hockey to a T, including like the Tyler Myers goal. Or sorry, it's the Pew Suter goal, but what a sick play by Tyler Myers to set it up. That's like the perfect distillation of what makes this team tough once they get the lead. It's not like LA. They're not getting the lead and then sitting back and picking you apart on mistakes. They're a little bit more aggressive into forcing you to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you better be able to pass through Vancouver's neutral zone wedge or it's coming back at you quickly. And the Canucks will just pin you. You know, like, when this team is holding a lead and the other team, like, has to make three skill plays just to cross center ice, you can feel the frustration mounting for that team. And you could feel it for the Oilers. Canucks build the 2-0 lead off like just one of those sequences, like a template sequence, which again speaks to the path for this Canucks team generally, like what makes them imposing. Because in some ways you could look at that first period and it's like, you know, there's no magic to why the Canucks were able to get the first goal. Like, that's good fortune on a lot of different fronts. Where this team's able to like hang its hat, where this team's able to look like the sort of team that, you know, even I'm going to go into the first round and most likely pick them. It's when they're holding those leads in the way that they just sort of systematically work to filter opponents to a specific part of the ice and cause quick counterattacks that, you know, serve to both grind clock, frustrate their opponent, and potentially pad their leads. I mean, textbook stuff, template stuff from the Canucks.
Yeah, and I really thought, again, to my point about, you know, not backing into the playoffs, playing that game where you do get the lead first and you're able to get into that identity and kind of just reassert, oh yeah, this is what we are so good at, this is what we do basically just as well as anybody, any team in the league at this point, is play with the lead. And the fact that they are able to do it on the road in Edmonton, really, really important, even beyond the actual stakes in the standings. Now, I will say, I was watching that game and thinking a lot, like, man, Edmonton could really use McDavid out there right now, which is, you know, a big hot take. But especially because they were having so much trouble moving it through the neutral zone. It's like, yeah, you know who would help? The best player on the planet at moving it through the neutral zone.
Well, the Canucks' forward speed looked like it gave them a lot of trouble, without question. Mm-hmm. And if, like, the Canucks attack your breakout, not quite at the stem, although partly at the stem, like, really what they're trying to do is get you leaning as you leave the zone, right? But they do attack you at the stem of your breakout, and McDavid's a human breakout.
Yeah.
You know, like, at the end of the day, it's not a lot different than how the Canucks would look playing against the Canucks without Quinn Hughes. You know what I mean? It would be like, oh, man, this team's having trouble breaking out. Like, no kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. They're, you know, if you're facing a lockbox without a human key, it's difficult. I want to really quickly read you some statistics from the season matchup.
All right.
Of the Oilers and the Canucks. You ready for this?
Uh-huh.
Over the course of the matchup, four games, 185 minutes at 5-on-5. The Oilers recorded 74 additional shot attempts, more than the Canucks did.
Amazing. Okay?
They outshot them by 21, and they were outscored 13-3.
3 5-on-5 goals in 180 minutes for the Oilers.
And it's,
wow.
And it's even funnier if you separate it for tied situations. Okay, so 48 minutes these two teams played each other while it was tied. The Oilers outshot the Canucks 40 additional shot attempts.
Shot attempts, yeah.
So 76 to 36. They outshot them by 13, and they were outscored 6-1. Point being, maybe don't take, you know what? I'll get into it in a bit. So I want to talk about what the game on Saturday actually meant for the Canucks, big picture. Two things. One that I think the team feels pretty dearly right now, and one that, you know, I think is worth us keeping in mind from a big picture perspective, and the team's obviously not going to go there mentally yet. So in terms of what the team will take from that game and feel good about, right? Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford sleeping like a little bit extra soundly over the weekend because it happened. Hughes, Miller, Pettersson don't necessarily fill the box score. Demko still not back.
Mm-hmm.
DeSmith, Pew Suter, Lafferty are sort of the big difference makers on Saturday night in Edmonton. And specifically, you get Suter's first goal since March 8th, and you get Lafferty's fourth goal in the last 41 games. 41 Canucks games, not 41 games that he's played because he was healthy, scratched a few times in there. With how badly the Canucks have needed scoring depth and how hard it's been to come by, I think just getting like a moment where some different guys make the difference in a game that the team had circled on their calendar and wanted, I think that's just good for the confidence of the group, good for the confidence of some of those players to go into the playoffs feeling like, man, it's been since March 8th. Or, man, the second half of the season's been really slow. I had like 11 goals at Christmas. You know, now it's like everyone, certainly those two guys get to go into the, now let's hopefully get a Mikheyev goal.
I think especially with Suter bumping back up to the top six.
100%.
Getting that immediate reward.
Well, especially because they need him there.
Yeah.
They, like, stone cold need him there. And so having some success, having some bottom line helps sort of cement Vancouver in their optimal top of the lineup sort of forward combinations. Here's the other one. So, not locked in yet, but the Canucks are going to win the division. And they're very likely now, overwhelmingly likely, and we'll get into this in a bit, to face the Nashville Predators in the first round. And in fact, although, again, not set in stone, we're at like a 72% chance of getting a Vegas versus Dallas first round series, which, sorry, Stars, great season. Have fun, right? Anyway, between Dallas, Colorado, and Vegas, you've now got three of the teams that I'd say have like the highest upside case in the Western Conference, all on the same side of the bracket. Only one of those three can make it to the Western Conference final. Meanwhile, Vancouver is going to end up in this bracket with Nashville, LA, and Edmonton, right? Now, Nashville's in some ways the most, well, it's the most likely Canucks matchup, but it's also in some ways the matchup we know the least about. Like, we know Vancouver crushed them in the three meetings, but there's a case to be made, an incredible one, that this has been a different team the last 30, 40 games. And then the LA versus Edmonton season series is sort of a mirror image of one another, where like the Canucks have struggled mightily against the Kings, but I think there's a lot of reasons to look at that matchup and think just because the Kings took 7 of 8 points in the regular season doesn't mean you should assume that Vancouver
write it
has
off
their
as
number.
A playoff opponent, for sure.
And likewise with Edmonton.
Yeah. Look, nobody's like picking at the Canucks to sweep Edmonton. It's like, well, look at the season series. You know what I mean? Like, we all can understand, put it in a little bit more context than that. You know what I mean? I hope so, anyways.
Canucks fans are telling Oilers fans riddles like they're Gollum in the Cave of Mysteries. Yeah, they're or sorry, Bilbo in the Cave of Mysteries. They're like, what's in my pockets? The Edmonton Oilers. That's how Canucks fans feel today.
Oh my gosh. Wow, that was a long way to go for that one. Also, I'm not sure. Is it called the Cave of Mysteries?
I don't think so.
Might be the Cave of Mist. I don't think it's called anything. I think it's just a cave. Anyways. Go on.
Yeah, you're right. It's just, it's a cave in the Misty Mountains.
Okay, okay.
The Cave of Mysteries. Okay. So not my best reference? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Anyway, here's the other thing about the Oilers-Canucks really quickly, because this for me is the real meaning of that game on Saturday. If you think about what the two games looked like when Vancouver faced Edmonton in Vancouver, I think there's a pretty sharp contrast between how the two games where Vancouver beat Edmonton with the Smith and net in Edmonton looked, right? Like, those were goalie wins in a way that, you know, not to say Vancouver hasn't had goalie wins this season, but those are probably two of the more extreme ones.
Yeah. Well, certainly. I mean, that the first one way back was like probably extreme goalies.
I thought yesterday, I thought even in the latter stages of the first and like when the Canucks started to generate themselves, every time the Oilers went the other way, it was like two consecutive glorious opportunities. Like the amount of five alarm chances the Oilers generated in the first 20 minutes was wild. So I really do think that was a DeSmith. Like, it wasn't a clear victory. Canucks got the empty netter to pad it. It was a one-goal victory where the Oilers had a huge preponderance of quality looks and shots and territorial control, as well as I thought the Canucks played in the latter 40. For me, that was a goalie win. Well, now, if these two teams face in the second round, the Canucks are only going to have to play there three times. And I know it's something that you have to, like, earn for it to even matter. You have to win the first round for it to even matter. But I do think it matters based on how these teams have matched up this season.
All right, let's we'll whip through some of the other things here in the whiteboard. We've got Gemma coming up at 12:30. So broadsheet, we won't play the clip, but probably as a lot of people have heard by now, Elliot Friedman in the latest 32 Thoughts saying that he thinks Vancouver is going to start next Tuesday. Dom's pointing at me for some reason, as if I never credit Elliot Friedman for hosting 32 Thoughts.
No, I'm just thank you for the drop there.
Great. Yeah, I don't think 32 Thoughts gets enough publicity on the station. Really, we really need to plug it a little bit more. Anyways, Friedman saying he doesn't think Vancouver's going to start until next Tuesday, so a week tomorrow. Of course, their final game is Thursday. The playoffs as a whole will start Saturday. That would be a very fast turnaround for the Canucks. So there's a whole, I love this time of year because we get really into like the concert scheduling logistics in Nashville and Vancouver, and like, well, Pearl Jam's playing here on this day, but
Death Cab for Cuties
in Nashville, and so there's a lot to break down. It might not even be Nashville. It might end up being somebody else.
Death Cab for Cutie playing Transatlanticism in the Encore, a tribute to my feelings about a Vancouver-Nashville first round series. I want you so much closer.
Very good. That was better than the Cave of Mysteries. Much better. So anyways, looking like my kind of rule of thumb here is if Friedman even just kind of casually is dropping it on 32 Thoughts, that, you know, that's a pretty high degree of confidence. Not guaranteed. We could see something else could shake out here, but you might want to circle April 23rd as a likely game one date for the Canucks next week. Lineup notes update. No changes to the lines at practice today. They're on the ice at Rogers Arena right now. No surprise with a successful game in Edmonton on the weekend. All three goalies on the ice per Brendan Batchelor. And of course, the biggest lineup question now is Thatcher Demko's status. It would seem very likely that he plays tomorrow against Calgary. If not, that's a big story.
Yeah, unless there's a setback in the next 24 hours, I would expect him to play. And that'll be closely watched, I think, by Canucks fans. Question, do you think you give him both?
I think that is, like, so between Ian Clark and Thatcher Demko that I can't even begin to answer it.
Yeah,
it's honestly just like, Thatcher, what do you want to do? You know what I mean?
My guess is yes, by the way. I'm just going to go out on a limb and suggest yes. Do the probabilities
okay.
Quick?
I got to go. So we'll, there's a longer discussion to be had about all the different playoff scenarios, but quick, 1 point they need to win the division or for Edmonton to drop a point. Edmonton plays San Jose tonight. Interestingly, McDavid will be in the lineup tonight after missing Saturday's game. 72% chance of playing Nashville in the first round per Dom's model, 19% for Vegas. That's an implied 9% chance of LA. Although I think it's a little more complicated with LA than that. So we can get into that later on in the show.
Gambling odds, the Canucks line against the Flames open for tomorrow opened with an over-under of 6, and you can find it at 6.5 at the moment. You really think a game with Thatcher Demko is going to be that high scoring?
That's got Andrei Kuzmenko in it, too.
We'll get into that.
All right, that's
good, though. He's not bad.
He's not bad, but it's just funny seeing Calgary fans in the same part of the cycle that Canucks fans were not that long ago of Andrei Kuzmenko.
Yes.
It's like, wow, he's helping us win all these meaningless games down the stretch. This is amazing. All right, cool. Anyways, we'll take a break. Gemma Carson-Smith from Canadian Press joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.